Welcome to On the Road with the American Society of Highway Engineers. I'm Amanda Schumacher. On the Road with ASHI is a podcast focused on bringing you interviews with transportation thought leaders from across the United States. Melissa's off today, but I've got you covered. Today, we are interviewing Lee Lilla, ASHI National President. Now, you may remember that we interviewed Tim Matthews for our first interview. We have now switched gears, and Lee is our new president. Lee shares with us her new background and her journey with ASHI, as well as her perspective on leadership, mentorship, and upcoming trends in the construction and AE industries. So let's jump into our interview with Lee. And after the interview, please don't forget to like, follow, and rate the interviews. 5 stars, of course. Thanks so much, Lee, for joining On the Road with ASHI. We're so excited to have you.
Thank you for having me. I love what you guys have done with this production so far, so I'm honored to be a part of it.
Well, we're very happy that you wanted to be a part of it. I think you're a key leader in this organization, as we'll get into, and you know, we're so excited to hear what you have to say. But for those that don't know you, maybe talk a little bit about you and your day job and a little bit about what you like to do on the day-to-day.
Yeah, so I work for David Nelson Construction. It's a family-owned heavy civil contractor. They also do buildings too in restaurants. But I've been with them since 2010. I was a civil engineer right out of school. Then the market kind of crashed in 2008. I was with a different engineering company as a tweener job. And then my neighbor worked for Nelson and they got a big contract. And they were like, hey, Robbie, get your resume in the door. So right now I manage 3 projects in the Tampa Bay area. They're all spread out 50 miles here and there. The biggest one is $40 million and the smallest one's $15 million. I also help with our design build pursuits and I'm participating in some local efforts. We do a Construction Career Days event here to try and get workforce interest high school kids in construction careers, show them that you don't necessarily have to go to college. So I'm involved in that committee and do several other things for our transportation builders here.
Wow, that's so interesting. Let me jump in on that a little bit with the you know, the educating the youth and understanding that there are different pathways for everybody, because, you know, I'm not an engineer, but I'm super involved in an engineering world. Can you explain maybe a little bit about what that committee does and what that whole day includes and education process is?
Yeah, it's a really cool event. I think I can't remember when it started. I don't know the exact date, but it would bus in high school kids from all the local areas, and it's a statewide thing. So there's one up in the Northeast, one in Tampa, et cetera. But they bus in high school kids that aren't necessarily college bound. And originally, like, owners of companies would fly their helicopter in and land and say, like, see, I didn't have to go to college to do this. There's options.
That's awesome.
Now it's a whole day. They have a heavy equipment lab, a career fair booth, and learning labs where a lot of consulting companies come in and do like a concrete cookie lab or, you know, like a, do a sieve analysis and do giveaways. And it's just to get kids interested that maybe not aren't college bound. And with the student loan crisis we're facing, we're hoping that would increase some involvement and hopefully develop tomorrow's workforce.
Absolutely. And what are the age groups it targets?
It's high school age. So
high school age. Okay.
Freshman, but we do have some technical colleges. So some young adults that are already going to welding school or whatever the local technical colleges are teaching also attend. It's a really rewarding day. Start planning for it like now and it happens in the spring.
That's tremendous.
Well, it gets co-funding from DOT. So it'd be really great if we could start modeling this. I know it says DOT came and witnessed what we did last year. So it's taken off.
That's fantastic. So how about personally? What are you interested in? What have you been doing lately?
I mean, just staying afloat. We're so busy, you know, with work, but we have a really good core group of friends. So we enjoy time by the pool. My husband and I don't have kids. So we enjoy our weekends working on the house and working out. I play golf, so I try and hit the range at least once a week to stay on top of that. But that's about it. ASHI's keeping me pretty busy this year and our other extracurriculars for work.
Awesome. Well, that's a great transition. So about your journey with ASHI, maybe expand on how you got started and to your rise to where you are now as the president of our national organization.
Thank you. Yeah. So actually, it's kind of, I guess, given the uncertain times that we feel like we're approaching, the first company I was with out of school closed in 2008. And like I said, I took a job that I found as fast as I could. But when that company closed, I was driving home and was like, I know nobody to call right now. So when I finally got an opportunity with a company that invited me to go to events, I was immediately like, yes, I'm saying yes to everything for the first year that I'm here. So the next time this happens to me, I'm going to know who to call. I went to a meeting and somebody said, hey, we need an ASHI membership chair for Tampa. Are you interested in? That was when I was in my yes mode. So I started as a Tampa membership chair. I think that was in 2010. Then just worked my way up to be Tampa president and then joined the Southeast board as secretary. I don't remember the exact year, but that's obviously a strong and great group with the Georgia section and Northeast Florida and some other strong sections. And then an opportunity came available for a director position when Greg Dutton moved up to vice president. So I threw my name in the hat, and that was, I think, about 10 years ago, maybe a little less. So just been going. but it's been really fun and rewarding. And I think we've made some lifetime friendships. So
yeah, you may have already just hit on it. One of the key takeaways from your involvement with ASHI being friendships. And I feel the same way about that. It's tremendous. And are there any other kind of key differentiators that you see about ASHI versus other organizations and causes that you're involved in?
Well, I mean, I started as an ASCE member like most of us in college, but I appreciate the inclusivity of ASHI. You know, we have attorneys in construction and right-of-way acquisition groups and consultants, and it's just a really great spot for collaboration. I listened to a little bit of the Tim podcast, and what, you know, we all agree on is creating organic relationships makes it a lot easier when you have to have a business conversation with somebody. So I prefer to start as friends over business colleagues and go from there. So it's been really valuable. I believe that you get out of it what you put into it, from baby shower invites to wedding invites to the socials we get to go to. I mean, we've really made some great friendships, and it makes it a lot easier if you have an engineering question. You can just pick up the phone and call, and it's not awkward because, you know, you've spent this time organically building a friendship.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. It's a major impact and benefit. And it's, you know, nationwide benefit, really. It's not just even within your local region. It's like you're saying, you put more into it, the more exposure you get, and the more help you can get along the way too, in partnerships going forward. But I'd love to hear if there's anything different, since you're kind of on another side of the industry. And what I love about ASHI is that it is diverse and includes all facets of the industry. So is there anything different that you feel has affected you on the construction side?
Well, I touched on it a little bit just now, but we run into a situation on a job site because I put the time in to make these relationships. It's really easy. Hey, my CEI is telling me this. Can you just confirm real quick that they're telling me this accurately? Or do I have a reason to maybe engage in a little further discussion on this? So I've done that more than once with some people in Tampa that I've worked with through ASHI. The other thing is, I think engineers are a little bit more hot off the presses as far as design build opportunities. So if someone approaches you, usually by the time the project's advertised, it's too late. You need your engineering partner. So I think it's really helped with design build pursuits. We have a couple marketing meetings with some of the engineering firms that we get to work with in ASHI. And that's strictly from the time we've put into building these relationships. So it's been beneficial. I don't know that it's always tangible from the contracting side. So, but luckily my company supports my involvement, and I think we're going to see the fruits of that for the rest of my career.
Absolutely. Do you have a favorite event or memory that you'd like to share during your ASHI days?
Where were we with it? The rain on the golf course was so out of control. Was that Pittsburgh?
Yes, that was Pittsburgh.
I think the temperature dropped like 20 degrees and we just kept trying to play. So that was really special. I think my first conference was the Baltimore one, and that was truly eye-opening to see how the group operates on a national level, because you don't really get to experience it, I think, until you go to a conference. So I would encourage anyone that hasn't been to one yet to try and get that on their itinerary.
Yeah, absolutely. I know our next one coming up is Georgia. They're a great section, strong section. And I know details have been released for that. So just a plug for them to check out the website. We'll post it in the podcast notes too, so you can get more familiar with what they've got going on. But always a great conference planned by that team.
The most useful hour that we have at the conference is that region section officer meeting where everybody's in the room that's in their section leadership. And I just think that is the most beneficial block of time at the conference. And I don't want to steal the conference committee's thunder, but I think they're making that like a whole track this year where you can kind of get best ASHI practices. So maybe have one of them on to elaborate on that. But I think that's going to be really beneficial.
Like you said, just a place to share best practices and ideas and get new ideas for topics or events you may not have tried yet within your own section. So I did want to jump into a little bit the trends kind of going within your line of work to the construction side. We're all experiencing it in different ways, but would love to hear your perspective on, you know, the current supply chain issues and how that's affecting either your jobs, timetables, timeframes with projects. If you could just elaborate on that, that'd be great.
Yeah, well, I mean, everybody that's in our industry is being affected by it, especially right now we're dealing with, I'm doing concrete pavement on my rest area project and just day by day, whether we're going to have enough concrete to pour has been an issue. So we've had to switch mix designs on the fly. So that's kind of how we've navigated that. But the big thing is the surprises. Like, I think, you know, the big ticket items are going to take a long time. Like, we're building, like I said, a rest area. So we ordered the HVAC units as soon as we could. And those are taking forever. But some of the, like the traffic signalization lighting components are really pushed out. And I guess maybe that's because of computer chips. I don't know exactly, but, and you're only as good as the updates you get from your subcontractors. So most of my projects have had good timing so far, but we're kicking off some new ones. So I don't know. It's just going to, everyone's just going to have to be patient, especially like we talked about before that we started that with the transportation bill passing last year, we've all got bigger budgets than ever, but we need people and materials to build the work. So
do you feel that it's almost garnered an environment for more innovation or different ways of doing things?
Yeah, we talked about this with the DOT on the rest area project specifically. They always want a DOT approved mix, obviously, but for concrete sidewalk, they're saying maybe we can go with a non-structural, non-DOT approved design, and that might speed things up. So we've been very fortunate that the department's been really good to work with and no ideas, you know, we're just kind of throwing everything at the wall and seeing what we can work through together. One of the things that's delaying the rest area project is a backup power supply for a truck parking system. It'll tell you how many truck parking spaces are available. Is that really a reason to delay the opening of this project? No, the traveling public should have beneficial use. So looking at items like partial acceptance is another kind of outside the box thing that the department's looking at. So we'll see.
You know, everybody's kind of the same mind in that way. How do we solve it together? We are same way on the design side. You know, we're obviously not out in the field building, but knowing what is being delayed and those major ticket items, it's also spurring us to think in a different way on the engineering design side. And a lot of that comes from feedback from the contracting side of things too, understanding what can actually be built in this desired schedule.
We're doing a really neat bus rapid transit project in St. Pete where we're building 30 bus stops from downtown St. Pete to the beach. And it's got the transit signal priority. So the buses will get the lights in their favor as they pass the stations and really elaborate screens saying next bus arriving in so many minutes. One of the things that held us up was this guide strip that the bus kind of bumps into because so the pedestrians just walk right on and off the bus. And that got delayed due to everything. They entertained the idea of installing temporary so they can get the job open and hit their dates because that project has federal funding. So that was another creative solution that we were appreciative of because we're all just doing the best we can. But that'll be a new project.
Absolutely. It sounds really interesting. I feel like I need to get down to Florida and see some of these things. It's been a while. You bring up a good point too, you know, with these creative solutions and also what COVID has kind of changed our mindset about too. There was a, you know, Florida resident satisfaction survey that I looked into prior to our conversation here. And it mentioned that bike and ped access has significantly risen since its last survey in 2018. This is a 2021 survey. So are you seeing more consideration of bike-ped access on your projects?
Yeah, so my project, the one we haven't talked about yet, the third one is a widening of a very busy urban corridor in East Tampa, and they're entertaining an idea to add the bike lanes are green here and they have delineators. So we're pricing that up for them. That was an add-on, probably reacting to the new trend. Where our office is situated is Pinellas County, and we have a trail that goes from end to end. It's 46 miles, and we've done most of the pedestrian crossings. They go over the roads, so they have surface level crossings and they have bridges. That gets used every day. It's a really nice facility that we're lucky to have. So there's been a lot of trail projects, and we like to get our hooks in them when we can.
Hinging on that same, maybe more environmentally conscious mode of transportation, you mentioned you have some interest in the electric car vehicles. Anything you wanted to expand on there?
Well, I mean, I have mixed feelings on it. I know that's not very progressive, but sometimes I think that the cure is worse than the disease. I mean, I need to do my Googles before anyone challenges me when they see me, but you know, those batteries do have an environmental cost. And I think, you know, California just experienced the strain on its grid and they're requiring electric cars by 2035. So we have to make sure all of our facilities are upgraded to match that demand. And conversely, unless there's some sort of reactive adjustment to the gas tax, then there's not going to be any way to build those roads. And electric cars provide the same damage and impact to roads as fuel-driven cars. So it just needs to be some proportional adjustments, you know, where every action has an equal and opposite reaction. So just need to make sure everything's built up to match.
I agree with you that, you know, we need to be cautiously optimistic and approach the way that is going to be best for all. And maybe that's going to be a little slower than some want. But I agree with your perspective there.
I was just going to say, I went to a convention in August and there's even electric heavy machinery coming out. And I think the operating time was not conducive to like a full day of work, but obviously everyone's heading in that direction. So that's kind of interesting.
Kind of in that same vein, how do you feel about autonomous vehicles?
I mean, I think it's cool until there's a glitch. You just hear those horror stories of somebody being on autopilot and something going tragically wrong. So we have some autonomous buses that help with that last mile for trips. And that's really beneficial, especially with the aging population of Florida that might not be able to operate a car, that get on your little auto bus and go to the grocery store. So I think that's interesting and needs to be explored.
We've been involved in this organization for a long time. We've been in the industry for a long time. And you talked about how educating youth is really important to bring them in for the next generation. But I'd love to just take a bit of a tangent on that and talk about how important do you feel it is to kind of educate women specifically within this industry, understanding that we are still in the minority? Or do you have any takeaways from you've risen up through the leadership of a predominant organization nationally and have so many great stories to tell? I'm sure you have a lot of things you could share and advice. So if you'd like to share anything for the women of the future, I invite you to.
Thank you. Yeah, I think I mentioned this at my induction speech, but my mother was an aerospace engineer. My dad's a meteorologist. So growing up in my house, it was never taboo or weird. I mean, it was kind of like, you're always going to go into STEM or that. I think I took it a little bit for granted because that was just the norm for me. And then when I got into construction, it did take a little bit of convincing, like, yes, I'm okay with getting my shoes dirty. I don't mind swearing. Our offices, for the most part, are not glamorous, but there are opportunities to, you know, get out and get dressed up. But I think for women, it's just really important. It's old school advice, but if you've never read Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg, it's a little dated now, but I really get mad when you're in a room at a big meeting and all of the women just by default don't sit right at the table. Like, just grab your seat at the table, whether you're involved or not. I mean, so that's old school. We interviewed a young woman yesterday, and when it came to her salary expectations, she used a lot of words to hedge it, to say, you know, I don't want to seem greedy or rude. And I was like, just ask what you want, you know? And so I think we just need to get out of that and just be direct. What I've found is we're a lot better at remembering dates, which is really beneficial in construction. I can auto recall now on July 12th, this is what happened. So I think that's kind of a skill that most of us have that's very applicable in this industry. It's been a good experience. I got complimented on my meeting running skills at our first EC meeting. So, I don't know. I think we're just good at using our listening skills to our advantage. And I don't know. I think it can be an advantage rather than a disadvantage.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Do you think that there are any particular areas that you would recommend to get started, say within ASHI, like your local section? Is there a committee that you feel is best to get started there, not just for women, but for any youth looking to get involved in the organization?
I think the path that I took, the membership chair into section secretary, is the section secretary is one of the most important people because they maintain the lines of communication, maintaining the accurate membership records. So I think the secretary is really who sees, you know, what's going on, the committees, you know, activities and programming. So I think secretary or membership chair or getting involved in the section's programming is the way to go. Similarly, at the region level, being a region secretary is a great place to be because you're running those communications back and forth between national and getting exposure to Nancy and Tom and the rest of the national board leadership. But it's important if you're going to take on those positions too, that you have the commitment for them.
That's a key takeaway, because a reminder, we are, to everyone that may not know, we are a full volunteer organization. Yes. At all of the leadership options. So yeah, like you were saying, you get back what you put in, and it's really a lot of personal time sometimes to get be putting in to get that reward. So it is all worth it. For those that are looking to start that journey, absolutely is worth it.
Well, and just a couple of things I would suggest, you know, we do the officer training Zoom, I think, now. So we're getting those mm-hmm. dates set, me, Stan, Dave Greenwood, Frank, and Tom. So we'll get those dates out as soon as possible. Another good practice is to not have officer turnover every year, because it kind of does take a year to get to know what to do unless you're truly in a succession. So I think the national's recommendation is to have, you know, one or two terms. Read your bylaws. it takes some time to get up and running. And everybody wants to help people that are putting in the time and effort. So if you have a question, start with your local leadership, look to your region, and national's happy to help too.
Absolutely. So for those that didn't attend the conference and didn't hear your speech, you know, maybe can you highlight some of your key initiatives for the next year?
Certainly. So the strategic plan is up for renewal, and we talked about Tim started a diversity initiative for as far as contractors, DOT, et cetera. So we want to continue that, and we want to make sure the strategic plan is reflective of what he took on, as well as Stan, who's vice president, and Don, who's second vice president. So we had a workshop in August to get that underway, and our going to continue that. Catherine Fink's heading that up. We have a really strong committee. Additionally, last year we pared down committees so we can operate more efficiently. So we think certain things like student sections and partnerships kind of occur organically at the section level. So in eliminating those committees nationally, we need to make sure that the region is empowered and has direction to take that on. So the big undertaking, and I don't know if we'll get it done in my term, is to look at the region structure, provide empowerment to them to maybe do a regional conference. I know the Southwest had one this year, Mid-Atlantic's been putting one on. And then take on some of those responsibilities like student sections and partnerships. We need to provide guidance and direction. We can't just say, here you go. So we have an ad hoc committee forum to do that, but that is a tremendous undertaking. So we're going to try and get that kicked off.
Well, that is certainly a lot to get done. But I know that, you know, even if it's not done within your term, you'll do a great job laying that groundwork and that foundation. And it's really all about just getting it started. Like you said, we have a tremendous group here that can continue it forward and continue to develop that as the years go on. But kind of in, I think, closing here, you know, is there anything else you would like to share about either your ASHI journey, you know, your hopes for the organization, even years past your term, or really any key takeaways, again, that you've gotten in the leadership positions that you've had over the past years?
I think to start, I would just highlight that best practices guide that Rob Profit's membership group put together. Now that we're in the new normal, and I hate that term, but it is what it is. You know, not every company is willing to let their staff drive across town for a lunch. So we've talked about having an in-person meeting followed by maybe an online meeting and kind of doing that hybrid structure. So I think referring anybody to that guide for programming is a really good idea. I'm excited. We're definitely going to get the strategic plan wrapped this year, but the region empowerment plan is going to take longer than that. And I'm just so humbled and thankful for the opportunities this group's provided. And kind of, it's just kind of baffling that to be president and have their trust. And I think we're going to have a great year. Now that the sections are back underway, I've gotten some invitations. My schedule's getting busier, but it's all fun stuff. And I'm going to just embrace it while I can.
Part of the presidency, right, is to travel around. So for those that are listening from sections and regions that maybe haven't had a president visit in a long time, or you have actively had presidents visit, please reach out to Lee. We'll put her contact information in there and she can work it around. And even if she can't be there in person, it could be passed on to another member in the leadership group to either come and support you at your event, talk at your event.
The whole board is eager to travel after a couple years of minimal travel. So if I can't be there, somebody certainly will try to. And I would lean on the national directors too for support on any questions with the sections. We're nothing without the sections. So whatever the board can do.
Absolutely. And myself as the PR chair too, you know, feel free to reach out to me anytime as well. We have materials that you can all use because meetings are starting to get kicked off. And for those conferences that we are attending as with national presence, I mean, we can have a booth, we can support it in a bigger way. But Lee, so thankful to have you on today. Your tremendous leadership and friendship over the years, I've admired you and so happy I got to talk to you today. And thanks for all of your advice and perspective on the industry.
Well, the respect is mutual and I'm thankful for our friendship and I just look forward to what this group's going to accomplish next. So thank you.
So much for joining us for On the Road with Ashi with Lee Lilla. Lee's well-rounded perspective on the industry sure gives us a lot to work towards and think about. I hope you'll join us next time when we interview Sam Modi, Ashi National's new Sections Committee co-chair. And in the meantime, don't forget to like, follow, and rate the interviews 5 stars, of course.